Community Radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Jada Lucas.
And I'm Jonah Chester. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, October 23rd, 2017.
But it's a ripple effect, and you may not be able to see the impact that it has, but when enough of those ripples sort of form, it starts to form a wave that can take a life of its own.
Veteran journalist and Bloomington native David Schuster speaks to the challenges of fact-based reporting in today's community report.
Also, coming up in the next half hour, All Options Pregnancy Resource Center is a local organization that provides counseling for abortion, adoption, infertility, and pregnancy loss. We'll hear from other staff members, Camille Vanden Dries, about her work with All Options on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Vice President Mike Pence visited Brown County State Park this weekend. The vice president was in Brown County for a family celebration of his son, Mike Pence Jr.'s wedding. Mike Pence Jr., a Marine Corps airman, was married just before his father's inauguration in January of this year. The exact nature of the ceremony was unclear. Pence landed in Air Force 2 at the Columbus Airport on Friday. Flights in and out of the airport were redirected and the airspace was limited over the weekend. Certain areas of Brown County State Park were restricted during Pence's visit. Fall is often the park's busiest time of the year, and millions of tourists visit Brown County annually to watch the change of seasons. The Washington Examiner, a conservative tabloid, used the Pence visit to attack local Democrats, including former MCCSC school board member Sue Wanzer. Wanzer made a statement on social media last week, warning of restrictions at the park due to the vice president's visit. The Examiner, based in Washington, D.C., ran a headline against Wanzer, which stated, quote, "Democrats attack very private wedding of Pence's Marine son," unquote. All areas of Brown County State Park are expected to be open to the public today.
The state of Indiana is hiring a private law firm to respond to the number of public record requests regarding the private email accounts of former Governor Mike Pence. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb's office has received over 50 requests for information contained in two private AOL email accounts used by Pence. The Associated Press is among several agencies that have filed complaints that the state has been slow to respond to the request. It is legal in Indiana for officials to conduct public business through private email accounts, but that information is still susceptible to public information requests. The law firm McNeely Stephenson in Shelbyville was hired at a cost of around $100,000 annually in order to oversee the backlog of public records requests.
Governor Eric Holcomb has signed an executive order detailing steps to allocate funds for Indiana's $40.9 million portion of the Volkswagen Environmental Mitigation Trust Fund. The trust fund was formed after a settlement between the Department of Justice and Volkswagen for its violations of the Clean Air Act. The order also establishes the Indiana Volkswagen Environmental Mitigation Trust Fund Committee and places the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, or the IDEM, as the lead administrative agency for the trust fund. The 11-person trust fund committee will be made up of representatives from both the public and private sector. The trust fund will be used to help offset pollution emitted by vehicles that violated the Clean Air Act. Currently, the committee is looking at replacing diesel-powered machines with more energy-efficient alternatives. The committee will also be responsible for establishing procedures to distribute funds and will work with IDEM to create a long-term plan for fund distribution. The plan will be subject to Indiana's open door law and can be viewed by the public for comments or objections. IDEM is also asking Indiana residents to weigh in on how they would like the funds to be distributed. For more information on the settlement and to view an early version of the draft framework for the plan, listeners can visit in.gov/IDEM/VW Trust.
and Indiana law may throw a wrench into the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department's plans to cull deer populations at the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve. The nature preserve, north of Bloomington, has experienced what experts are calling extreme pressure on native vegetation due to growing deer populations. Cull plans in the Griffey area have been in the works since 2014, going so far as to contract White Buffalo Incorporated, a hunting firm, to shoot deer. Plans to curtail whitetail populations were abandoned in February of 2015, after an abundant acorn crop reportedly ruined hunters' chances, but hopes for a cull in the area was rekindled this spring, when vegetation specialists recommended the department conduct a cull in order to preserve the indigenous plant life. But when the Indiana legislature passed House Enrolled Act 1415 in April, they inadvertently prohibited the use of rifles on public land. The Enroll Act was meant to clarify what high-powered rifle rounds were allowed on private land, but instead prohibited rifles on public lands altogether. That prohibition is causing the Indiana Department of Natural Resources headaches with deer hunting season approaching this winter. When asked about the legality of a deer cull at the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve, which is public land, DNR Communication Division Director Marty Benson told WFHB that the DNR is, quote, looking into it. Republican State Representative Sean Eberhardt of Shelbyville authored House Bill 1415. He told Fox 59 earlier this month that he's certain that the law can be amended when the legislature reconvenes early next year. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jada Lucas.
And I'm Jonah Chester. Veteran journalist and Bloomington native David Schuster spoke about the role of journalism in promoting civility and fact-driven opinion during a fundraiser Saturday for the Center for Justice and Mediation. Schuster built his career through a wide variety of news outlets, including CNN, Fox, and Al Jazeera America. He currently is an anchor and managing editor for global news service I-24 in New York City. In today's community report, we provide an excerpt of a discussion between Schuster and WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn about the challenges the media faces in establishing facts and discussing them with civility.
With so many forces at work to delegitimize even the most highly regarded media sources, with so many sources available at consumers' fingertips to find news that supports their own viewpoint without ever having to consider an alternate point of view, is it idealistic to think that we in the media can assemble an accepted set of facts on which we can base reliable coverage?
I think that's probably the greatest challenge that all of us in the media face right now, is that, you know, the goal, of course, of most journalism is to enlighten fellow citizens, our listeners, our viewers, our readers, and provide them some more context about the world around them, the community around them, and do it in as fairly and as accurately a way as possible. And yet there is a financial incentive, and there are so many media organizations who have found a profit center by trying first to appeal to people's preconceived notions or their opinions. So I'm hopeful. I think that there's still people out there who also want an objective recitation of what has happened in our community today, or what has happened in our nation or our world today. And there's still some outlets that are doing that. It's a small number, but it is, I think, the crucial challenge for journalists, is because it's so much easier in a way to give an opinion or to find people who have an opinion, as opposed to chasing down somebody who's actually at the heart of a story and finding out what happened.
You mentioned last night the tendency for news outlets to take the cheap route and assemble a panelist of, you called it, the pundit class. Mm-hmm. What does that do to the listener? What does that do to their ability to ferret out real facts?
I think it causes the public to generally mistrust the media, that I think the public knows that there's something that's off when, in the midst of so many important, crucial news stories around the world and around our community, and you have a lot of people who are simply just sitting around and talking about it. Oftentimes, these are people who don't even have a direct impact on the story. They're just observing. It is a lot more expensive at every level to send a reporter with a microphone and a camera into the field to actually where a story is happening and report on, trying to gather, well, what actually was the story. It's much cheaper to bring people into your studio and have five or six people on television just pontificating about it, and you can fill more airtime. And there's also a human nature. We all like to watch, you know, arguments, and as long as we're not involved in them, but seeing two people fight, it's why, you know, wrestling is so popular. We like conflict. But I'm hopeful that people are coming around to the idea that, well, if we really, though, want to address what's happening in our society, we also need to have platforms and environments where people can simply provide the facts.
How can we convince people, those people who don't trust the media, to trust the facts that we're working so hard to dig up?
It's a great question. And I think the only way we can really do it is through time. I think in the short term, some news organizations have had some success by doing strong opinion journalism. But I think most of the public sees through that. And even the news outlets that are considered successful, Fox News and MSNBC being successful with opinion journalism, they're still reaching an incredibly small share of the overall U.S. population. On any given night, maybe 2 or 3 million people are watching Fox News or MSNBC. Well, we live in a country that has 350 million people. So that's, you know, 1% is watching cable news. Well, what are the other 99% doing? And so I think that's where the opportunity is for a lot of journalism outlets, is to try to figure out, okay, let people have their opinion, but let's also have platforms that provide people context and information and facts that can help them make judgments about their lives.
It seems like it's really common nowadays in almost every media outlet to mix fact and opinion. Can you speak to the reporter's job to interpret facts versus editorializing, and how that whole phenomenon impacts the public's ability to trust a news outlet?
So let's take an example of some of the recent hurricanes. And I spoke about this a little bit in front of CJAM, that there's an inherent conflict even when a hurricane comes in and wipes out, you know, Southeast Texas, and you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who have lost their homes. But the conflict is that, well, when you dig deeper into sort of the history of Houston, you see that there have been no zoning laws, that people have been building on floodplains, that the National Flood Insurance Program hasn't stopped people from building in areas that they shouldn't. So maybe if there had been some zoning laws and been some restrictions and some control, fewer people would have been flooded out. Now, at the time that people are having to leave their houses in canoes, that's maybe not the time to report the story, but there is an element of that story, perhaps a few days later, that it's worth the media chasing down. And in most cases, journalists don't have enough time to gather every single fact available. So they, at a certain point, have to make a judgment call.
I want to shift a minute to ask you about tactics you might have developed as a reporter and an interviewer. I was listening last week very briefly to a syndicated national program, 1A, with Joshua Johnson. The topic was freedom of speech, and he had as one of his guests a student who was part of the Black Lives Matter chapter at the College of William and Mary. Earlier in the month, that chapter had basically shut down a speaker from the ACLU who was speaking on their campus about freedom of speech. And he had a number of guests. She was one of them. But early in the show, he gave her the opportunity to voice her opinion. And she was so emotionally invested in that position, she couldn't hear an opposing view, no matter how diplomatically it was stated. And she was ready to hang up on the show early on. And I wasn't able to listen to the full show. But I'm wondering, how do you keep someone like that engaged in a dialogue? If we're striving for civil dialogue and trying to find solutions that we can all buy into to major problems, how do you keep them engaged?
One of the ways is to try to not only appreciate and acknowledge their emotional investment. We want people to be emotionally invested in the society around them. But after acknowledging and showing some respect for those passions, then I think part of the challenge and part of the obligation as an interviewer is to try to get them to put themselves in the shoes or in the mindset of somebody else, or be able to appreciate even perhaps a basic sentiment that the other side may have. And they start to acknowledge a little bit, yeah, there is validity to the opposite point of view. I think once you can start chipping away at that, then you also begin to signal to your audience that there is legitimacy perhaps to both sides. And you start to be able to test out opinions on both sides or arguments on both sides.
You mentioned last night that tapping into news reports from a variety of sources helps you be a better anchor, a better reporter, and perhaps a better citizen. Can you be more specific about why that's important?
By listening to BBC or reading the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal or conservative websites or progressive websites, I think you start to be able to hear a wider variety of stories, not just sort of how stories are analyzed, but you get exposed to more information. And the more information I think people are exposed to, you start to be able to then see, okay, well, where is the crossover? Where is their sort of general agreement? Because then it also helps all of us evaluate, well, what can I really believe? What is the information that's most relevant to me? And it also begins to help you evaluate the credibility of the news organizations that you put the most trust in.
There are journalists who joined the profession because they thought that their in-depth investigative reporting efforts would affect change in the world, and they're not seeing that. What would you say to them? Do you have any words of encouragement?
Well, I'd say the most important thing is all we can do. We can't, as journalists, tell a society or a community or a nation how to respond. All we can do is put information out there, and then at the end of the day or the end of the year or at the end of the election or whatever it is, the great thing about this country is that, the country then gets to decide. It's still worthwhile, though, because for all of the times when an investigative piece doesn't have an impact, there's still a huge number of instances where investigative reporting does have an impact, and it causes a policy change or a personnel change, or it causes an issue to suddenly rise to the forefront. For example, had it not been for investigative reporters, we wouldn't have known about the Harvey Weinstein scandal. I mean, Harvey Weinstein may never go to jail. He's been disgraced. His career is over. But all of a sudden in our society, because of those investigative journalists who started that trail, we now have an incredible discussion underway about sexual harassment. So it may not feel initially like your investigative story is changing anybody's opinions or is having the desired outcome, but it's a ripple effect. And you may not be able to see the impact that it has, but when enough of those ripples sort of form, it starts to form a wave that can take a life of its own.
I'm Sarah Vaughn with WFHB. I've been talking with David Schuster of I-24 News.
You can hear more of our extended conversation with Bloomington native and veteran journalist David Schuster at our website, wfhb.org.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference, volunteer.
My name is Camille, and I am a talkline advocate for All Options. I'm a fierce reproductive justice, reproductive health advocate, and I'm a healthcare worker, and that's what brought me to healthcare, wanting to advocate for pregnant individuals and for reproductive justice. And when I moved to Bloomington, it just seemed like the perfect fit to acknowledge the whole person and the whole person's experience, the way that the Talkline and the Pregnancy Resource Center does. Nursing practice is something that can always be grown, and being a Talkline advocate has grown my nursing practice exponentially. I don't think there's anything else that I could have chosen to volunteer my time with that would have informed it. So there are times where I'm on the line and I just want to fix it. And that's, nurses and helpers of all kinds, not necessarily just nurses, doctors, lawyers, firefighters, whoever, they just want to fix it. They want to make it better. They want to make whatever is distressing this person, they want to make it better. And there are just so many experiences where you can't. One of the most liberating experiences that a person can have is experiencing a stressful situation and having someone, whether it's a nurse, a firefighter, whoever, hold their hand and just stand there with them and experience it with them and allow them to talk about it. At the end of almost every single phone call, there's just a moment where the caller takes a breath and goes, "Thank you." And it's not necessarily the thank you that gets me, it's the breath, where they just take a deep breath and they realize, I've unloaded all of this and I don't feel judged. And that's been my my personal experience, it's not a particular one, but it's a consistent one. Moving into nursing practice with this guiding star of reproductive health and reproductive justice, it was just a matter of time before I became a talkline advocate. It's magnetic. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience to learn and grow with the people at All Options. Thanks for listening. I'm Camille with All Options.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Shalom Community Center is now open 7 days a week and in need of volunteers to provide services at the hospitality desk and in the kitchen. A weekly 2-hour shift commitment is requested on Saturday or Sunday. All training is provided. Or join the Hola Bloomington crew to help produce this weekly Spanish language radio program featuring news, entertainment, and public opinion. The program airs every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on WFHB. Spanish language skills are not needed to be part of this support crew, but a commitment of 1 to 2 shifts per month is appreciated. And finally, looking for a place to express your interest in social justice, racial harmony, and equal opportunity? The Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Birthday Celebration Commission is looking for you. Applications for new commissioners are now being accepted. Apply online today. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And I'm Jada Lucas. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.